Welcome to episode 4 of Being Better Gays with your hosts, me, Hannah.
And me, Helen. This is the show where we all aim to become better gays by exploring queer history and filling in the void in our LGBTQIA plus curriculum.
Disclaimer, this show will contain some swearing and explicit content, so if that's not your cup of tea, you still have time to turn back and pick something else.
This week we will be learning about the spy princess Eastern Jewel.
In gear news, penguin drama.
And we play the game of gay fact or fiction.
So if you're ready for a not so serious dive into all things queer,
let's go!
So this week in gay news, we're taking you to the exciting Amersfoort Jurens Park.
But sorry, I feel we need to like get a real true pronunciation of that.
Dieren Park. Zoo in the Netherlands. And in particular, the African penguin enclosure.
What's happening in the African penguin enclosure?
It's nesting season, Helen, of course.
Oh, here we go. I feel like I know where the story's going to go here, but keep going.
I mean, it's not a buried in the news story. This has got quite a lot of airtime, but it's just too fucking cute not to talk about.
Love penguins.
Love penguins. So this year, two male penguins, the dominant couple in the 17 penguin enclosure, continue to search to become dads.
Hold up, so the gay penguins are the most dominant.
Apparently,
penguins.
I've not fully investigated that. I've just gone with the story.
Who decides they're the most dominant couple?
I don't know. Maybe they're the most boisterous. I don't know. This couple have made it into the news before, as last year they stole another penguin's egg when no one was looking.
That's shocking.
Bad parenting by the other penguins if they weren't watching their penguin
well
baby.
Maybe they were going out and doing their like penguiny things thinking that their nest was all protected, and then like the gay dads swoop in.
They're on the constantly vigilant trying to find a baby.
Gotta stay alert.
Gotta stay alert.
They're not staying alert enough, these penguins.
Sadly, that penguin baby did not come to life. It did not hatch, so they were not fathers for another year. This year they've gone to next level. They've regrouped, thought it through, got a brand new plan, and they've decided to steal an entire nest.
They've just thought, an egg is not enough. We need to take over a whole nest now.
I haven't done my full research into this, based on, again, more knowledge of Happy Feet. One imagines they've like built with little stones and rounded it all up and made it pretty to have their babies in, and these dads have come along and been like, my nest.
Well, the Laviva have just like walked along and plonked onto the nest that's already existing, or they've been like sly as fuck and just been like taking the rocks and pebbles from that existing nest and just like taking it and making a new one.
It's hard to know because like some zoos, like they've got little like hatches where the penguins like go in the little houses.
Oh my god, just like
or little mounds. Anyway, so it was a great plan, great strategy, take the whole nest, but they've fucked up.
Oh man.
Out of all the nests, out of all the penguins in all the world, they decided to steal the nest of the other lesbian couple.
Do not fuck with lesbian eggs, guys.
I mean, I find it hard to believe that out of 17 penguins, there's probably the two gay penguins and the two lesbian penguins, and that's the one that they've nicked. So the lesbian couple have a little eggy that they were looking after, but because they are lesbians, it is not very likely it is fertilised.
I would say it's 100% unlikely.
I thought if you just tried hard enough.
That's not how it works.
So they've nicked this lovely little penguin's home, and they're apparently now dutifully caring. And apparently now they're dutifully caring for their little eggy in the hopes that they'll hear the little pitter-patter of baby penguin feet. But it won't be.
Like, who wants to tell these penguins like that it's not going to happen again this year?
Guys, gotta really like, eventually, think about it.
Eventually
again.
One year, though, they will steal an egg that is fertilised and they will get the pitter-patter of little tiny happy feet.
So we've got a little bit of statement from their zookeeper, Mark, who says, the gay couple are looking after the egg very well and taking turns in keeping it warm. Homosexuality is fairly common in penguins, but what makes this couple remarkable is that they've gotten hold of an egg.
They are sly and also on a mission.
They're really keen. Really keen.
They are really keen.
Like he says, gay penguins are very quite common, observed in the wild since 1911, which is probably since about the time we were observing penguins.
Yeah, I think we can pretty much guarantee that.
And gay penguin couples are found in zoos all around the world. Some zookeepers have been canny and given gay or lesbian penguins proper eggs to look after. So in Spain, a lesbian pair were given an egg and raised it, and it hatched. And in another zoo, a gay couple were given a little eggy to hatch in 2018. So I'm hoping that the zoo decide to give them an actual fertilised egg at some point, because they're really bloody trying.
They're trying really
hard. Trying so hard. And we can keep our fingers crossed that they find an extra egg.
Oh my God.
For their little daddies.
Ah. Okay, so this episode, we're going to start a two-parter on bisexual... A two-parter on bisexual spy princess Yoshiko Kawashima.
Well done.
Thank you. Everything that we say in Japanese is going to sound slightly strange because we have northern accents.
And Chinese will also sound strange because we were in Japan and China.
So everything sounds like Kawasaki.
That's racist.
That's not racist. That's just our voices. Okay, so we're going to start in China in the 1900s. And basically what we've written down is, it's complex AF.
We're trying to, as ever, give a bit of context. But in this instance, the context is fucking hard.
There is a lot going on at this point. So in 1900, China's kind of glory days were behind her, and the nation was in decline. Heavily controlled by foreign powers who dominated ports such as Shanghai. And since the 1800s, they'd seen a marked increase in involvement by European powers who had started to circumnavigate and find routes, sea routes to the east.
And for drugs and trade.
For drugs and trade. And China and that part of the world was heavily laden in things that we wanted. So there'd been ongoing opium wars between China and Britain and France, which led to Chinese defeats and the handing over to Britain of the strategically important port of Hong Kong. Did you know about the opium wars?
I did from listening to another podcast about the opium wars. I don't know if we can cross.
I think I literally say this every podcast, but literally...
There was two.
Yeah, I'd never even heard of opium wars. Why not? That would be interesting to learn in school, right?
I think I actually did a bit of, in a misspent youth in GCSEs, I did write a short story based in London with an opium.
Did you not? Where is the story and why is it not published?
I mean, it's GCSE, so it's not published, but that's the level of my understanding.
Rewind, what happened in this story?
It was a bit of like a murder opium war mystery. Not opium war, but opium like drug-fueled mystery.
Bloody hell.
I was reading something else at the time.
Angsty teenager much? Okay, so China lost effective control of her lucrative seaports, and 50 of China's most prosperous ports were deemed treaty ports, which meant that they were open to foreign trade and residents. So there's sort of like, not an infiltration, but a large increase in the number of foreigners entering China and starting to trade.
Yeah, which basically comes from defeats in several opium wars and things being handed over. And essentially we're trying to give you the vibe of China feeling, I guess, hurt and like their national pride was damaged in a way, and this is leading towards a change in how the country's managed.
Yeah. European nations also divided up China into spheres of influence, and the wishes of the Chinese were kind of ignored. This understandably created a bit of resentment among the actual Chinese population.
So looking for a bit of a scapegoat for all this, the Chinese people looked towards the Manchu dynasty. They hadn't felt the impact of everything that was going on because the royal family were kind of left alone in all of this to continue life as they'd already lived it.
Yeah, they were continuing as though the really old, you know, traditional Chinese way. I mean, the dynasties had been running for, you know, centuries.
For dynasties.
Yes, for dynasties. And the sort of this change in the Chinese population, foreign invasions, wars, was all culminating in basically just a feeling of sort of anger and frustration from the Chinese people.
There was a small period when the current king tried to enact, I think, 10 years of change. He thought his plan was going to be, so he was going to create additional schools, pump money into the infrastructure, kind of bring China forward. But he just couldn't get it through the conservative, I guess, parliament in a way they said no to all of that. So he tried his best to modernize, but couldn't get it through. So the people still didn't feel any love. So thus begins a fight for power. In 1911, there was a revolution and overthrew China's last imperial dynasty, the Qing dynasty, and established the Republic of China. The last emperor was 6 years old at this time and was abdicated, or his mom abdicated for him. In return for this, the imperial family was not murdered. And got to live in the imperial palace and kind of behave like nothing else was going on, while everything else, I guess, out with their walls started to change and form the basis of the new republic.
Okay.
So that's a head fuck for everyone. I hope that
there's a lot of
did that make sense, guys? But that is the scene in which our heroine is set.
So she was born in Beijing in 1907, Aisin Gyoro Zhangzhu, as the 14th daughter of Shang Kui, a Manchu prince of the Aisin Gyoro clan, which was the ruling imperial clan of China's Qing dynasty. Her mother was Lady Jiangye, who was Shang Kui's fourth concubine.
Wasn't she lucky? Concubine number four.
I mean, how many concubines did he have?
I don't know. He had a lot of wains, so probably many. Obviously, common practice.
Yeah, like, I think she had something like 38 siblings.
Yeah.
So, a massive imperial family. Ever-growing.
Ever-growing. Wouldn't fit into current social distancing rules. For slightly mysterious reasons, at the age of 8, she was given up to her father's friend, Naniwa Kawashima, for adoption. He was a Japanese espionage agent and a mercenary adventurer.
He sounds really interesting.
he sounds really interesting.
Like, imagine just like, but also we haven't talked about like all of this overthrow, all of this like change in the imperial household. They've gone from this like luxurious lifestyle where they've been waited on hand and foot, and it has been like this for hundreds of years, suddenly to have been told, right, you're now basically in exile, you have no rights, essentially, and this person is just going to adopt you.
Enjoy! He is a really key figure in how her life starts to change and develop, and I guess the path that she takes is led by his personal work background. There's some theory that she was left to bring harmony to the childless family as maybe a bit of more of a goodwill gesture, but it was potentially more politically motivated and a bit more calculated than that.
Absolutely, yeah. Her stepfather changed her name to Yoshiko Kawashima, and that's what she's mostly known as in the modern day.
She has got several names, but for the sake of consistency, we'll probably keep coming back to Yoshiko, otherwise your brain will explode like ours has.
Yeah, like to research so many different names, so many different aliases. And they moved to Tokyo, Japan, and she was raised and educated in the family house.
In that kind of why was she given up for adoption, why was she heading over to Japan, there's maybe clues within her education that she was given. So now she's in Tokyo, she was getting an education, which is great, but it was a bit of an odd one. Could have been that they were making early plans for her to be part of a restoration of the emperor and the Qi dynasty.
I mean, they might have seen something within her. She might have been, you know, she might have shone as a sort of a character, or she might have been, you know, very intelligent. And they've noticed that this girl basically can be moulded and useful in future plays.
It's still a bit of an odd one that she's kind of like, I guess, out of the 38 children, she's the one that's kind of thrust into this bizarre future. So as a teenage girl, she was sent to a girls' school, but it did not last.
Oh,
she only went for a year. Why? Again, we just don't know whether it was Troy who took her out and decided to move her on to a different school, or whether she was a pain in the backside and got booted out. Who knows? Or that school, we are again in the early 1900s, whether the feminine educational lessons were probably not what they wanted her to do. They wanted her to know other things.
Definitely not. So she moved from the girls' school into the boys' school, and she dressed like a boy and used a boy's name.
But this was given to her by her stepfather. So her stepfather was the one that kind of came up with Yoshio, which is good boy in Japanese.
What the hell?
What a good boy! And broadened her education massively. So she went to learn horse riding, judo, and fencing lessons.
So she's literally going undercover into school.
Spy school.
It's literally like spy school. Like this could be... like a film,
it is already a film is available already.
Yeah, no, like this, like even just this, like imagine having to like dress as a boy, use a boy's name just so you can go to school. What the hell?
I mean, exciting. That there's one account that said she would ride into school on a horse every day. Now there's, it sounds like something fabulous that she would definitely do.
Definitely.
Because she's such a character. But also, as we go through kind of Yoshiko's adventures, there's a lot of stuff where it's like, that's an interesting and great story. It might be bullshit.
Yeah.
there's a lot of her life that's been embellished for any number of political reasons from all different sides. But I like the idea of this young girl in a boy's uniform just rocking up to school on a horse foot crack.
What a total ledge. We think this is where she developed her love of playing with the masculine taste for fashion. Yeah. Cross-dressing alert!
But kind of through the story as we go through it, her visual appearance is really important to Yoshiko, and she certainly uses it in a manipulative way at times. She uses it to express her personality. I think she just genuinely loved fashion and loved being controversial and kind of blending them together.
I was also just thinking, like, just think about how exciting it would be if, like, your dad was like, okay, we want you to go undercover in this school. We need nobody to find out that you're a girl. It's like Mulan at school.
Mulan at school. Yeah. I don't know how it was sold to her by her stepdad. It could have been something much less fabulous than they just wanted to train her up in a way that was, you know, beneficial for them.
It certainly sounds like that.
So despite excelling in both sports and science and all good things, Yoshiko was expelled because she was unruly.
Why does that not surprise me?
It does not surprise me at all.
So at the age of 17, she's sent to military school. And after 2 years, she's well-versed in war science and espionage work.
As she continues to learn how to become a spy. So we're definitely going to come back to why all this upbringing was so important.
It's crazy, isn't
it? It's crazy. It just sounds wild. And this part of me just thinks like this is like the best life. Like, imagine, so exciting, but obviously horrible.
Yoshiko's biological father, Shang Kui, dies in 1922. He commits suicide by swallowing metals.
Yeah, metals. I'm going with, like, lead or mercury.
Oh, goodness me. So he leaves behind his 38 children and his wives and concubines. And of the 38 children, Yoshiko, or Oriental Pearl, as he fondly called it, was his favourite child. So maybe that's why he's sort of given her favour by sending her away. Getting her out the country, giving her this education, this upbringing. Maybe he sees something like a future for her in this.
She's going to come back and rule all of China.
Crazy world that we're living in. Her mother follows the Manchu tradition and promptly commits suicide to join Shang Kui.
So nice.
This blew my mind when I read this. I was like, oh my God, imagine just like finding out the news that you're, you know,
Bae's dead. Gonna have to top myself now.
It's actually outrageous.
There's a bit of me that's like, yeah, again, you're moving it in Japanese culture, but you've got the whole like falling on your sword type thing.
And also as well, she is a concubine, so maybe she, you know, she doesn't see a life without him. It's so
traditional. Well, she doesn't really have one. It's like it's a half life. She's not. She needs him to exist in that world. And without him, how does she move forward without another man? Because not going to get married, not going to get reconcubined.
Yeah, so for Yoshiko, basically, she loses both parents extremely quickly.
She does, but how much she actually knew them or interacted with them.
I mean, she was adopted at age... Well, the the dynasty fell at when she was age 8.
Yeah.
So she maybe knew them a bit, but still not particularly pleasant.
Not great news.
Not great news at all.
And then we get on to her stepfather being an arsehole.
Oh, God, here we go.
So her biological father and family had gifted her to this family and kind of hoped that she'd be safely looked after. But I think just as she got older and she's, you can't, it's like not, nothing is a reason for rape. Rape is bad.
Oh, absolutely not.
But she was this beautiful, vivacious woman. So her stepfather decided that he was going to rape her. He was going to have an affair with her. Which is just
dreadful.
Fucking dreadful. And this made her leave home, as you'd kind of hope you'd want to run away from that. And then we got curious accounts saying that she made 3 attempts on her life and we don't know why. And it's like, what the fuck? Of course you know why. Your stepdad tried to, like, force her into a relationship and have an affair with her. It's obvious that his behaviour has had a huge negative impact.
He's obviously a very controlling person, and she's living in his house. She has no family around her, like biological family, to protect her. The situation's just horrible, really, isn't it? You know.
So she's escaped this family for now, and she goes off into Tokyo to be her own woman.
Get in, lass. Go for it. You go, girl.
And as any woman knows, if you want to make a major change in your life, you cut your hair.
100%.
A new haircut means you've got shit to do. So Yoshiko cuts her hair short. And for a woman in Japan, this is just
outrageous.
Mind-blowing. You do not do that. You leave your hair super long, super complex hairstyles, all that jazz. But she has this, like, fabulous, like, 30s, 40s neck-length hair, which is, it just feels, like, fresh and powerful when you look in the images of her as well. Along with the side, she starts really embracing that blended fashion sense. They do talk about it as cross-dressing, but I think as a gay woman, I don't see it as that. I just see her embracing the other side to her personality.
A masculine
side.
Yeah, it's the same as when we did in part 1 and 2 about Vera. That same thing, they said, oh, she's a cross-dresser, which at the time it would have been quite controversial, but nowadays we just wouldn't bat an eyelid, you know? Yeah. So,
there's just more fluidity to her. There's a quote that maybe her, may not be her, maybe lies. But apparently talking to a newspaper, she said, people criticise me and say that I am perverted, and maybe they're right. I decided to cease being a woman forever and have a tendency towards the third sex.
Wow.
It's just like, even like now you read that and that's like, that's such a bold...
It's a very out there,
a bold out there statement to make. But I did a bit of digging and kind of, the concept of third sex does come up quite a lot in different non-Western cultures.
Yeah, sure.
So in Japan, so there was a group called the Wakashu who didn't ascribe to any particular gender, were very fluid. You see them in woodcut prints. There are saucy Japanese woodcut prints.
Oh my gosh.
Bet your eyes. Where you've got these people who aren't male, who aren't female, and are just, I guess, fluidly enjoying life and their sexuality in a very progressive way, that when Japan was more westernized, that idea of the third sex issue was, I guess, boxed up and put away in a corner, and we don't do that.
So she dresses in everything from tuxedos, military uniforms, like cool student garb, and what would we call that these days? Hipsters.
Calling her a hipster.
Yoshiko the hipster. And in her later life, Yoshiko poses for like numerous photos in these outfits, and she's like basically a pop star.
Yeah, but the images of her are effortlessly cool. You could see why women and men would just flock around that kind of personality and that vivacity for life, and just, I guess, being so different. She got to embrace all this in Tokyo in the 20s and 30s. It was very youthful, vibrant, new department stores, fashionable cafes, movie theatres, swing dance halls, high-tech transport, woo, and brothels.
Wow. I mean, she probably visited the brothels.
She did.
She's enjoying life. She's
Why
free.
Not? Live life to the full.
She's free.
So this youth movement challenged previous conservative views, and they just loved the, I guess, work hard, play hard mentality of working and then getting smashed and dancing to jazz in the evenings.
I think we can all sort of...
We could all get on board with that.
So there's a few rumours that she took more than a few rich lovers, both male and female, to support herself. She is playing the field. She's a player.
well, she's got no one to look after. Right? She's got the looks, she got the charms, get some sugar
daddies.
She's
basically just like getting some free accommodation each night.
Yeah, she certainly throughout her life makes the most of her feminine wiles to get by.
Yeah, totally. So her adoptive father broke up her relationship with a young lover who was a Japanese military officer in training.
He's got a fucking cheek as well.
He really has a cheek. And this guy's name was Toru Yamaga. So in retaliation, what does she do?
Shaves her head off. Why not?
She does a full Britney.
I can't bring up Britney. She wasn't like... Free Britney.
She does a full Britney. She goes number one all over.
And for a woman that was already like a in the social eye, an influencer like Britney, this got a lot of press attention in Japan. Of people, I guess, probably she's already cut her hair once.
She's gonna do it again.
It all off now. And I don't know particularly how much that would have fucked off her father. Maybe he really liked her while he was being a horrible rapist.
I just think she's just trying to do these like sort of attention grabbing things. Like shaving her hair off, wearing all these outfits, being a total player.
Yeah, she's just wild, man.
She is wild child.
And clearly pissed off. She must have liked Toru. Around this time, she takes on a Chinese courtesy names. Courtesy names are kind of historically given when you come into adulthood. So she maybe saw herself as kind of moving on and being her own independent woman. Or was hoping for that. She took a name of Dong Zhen. Which means Eastern Jewel.
She's most commonly known by Yoshiko or Eastern Jewel.
Sounds like a great code name.
I mean, Eastern Jewel? Imagine being called Eastern Jewel.
It does sound rude.
It sounds amazing. Like, Eastern. She obviously thinks a lot of herself, doesn't she?
Look at my jewel.
Oh, Hannah, for God's sake, man.
So she's had this kind of, I guess, brief moment of living her life to the full, doing what she wants to do. But unfortunately, I guess she is who she is and she can be used as a political pawn. And at this point, her family, I think, decide to remember she exists, create a lovely and arranged marriage for her.
Oh, just what she's always
just what
wanted.
What she always wanted, clearly. So she's now 20 and she has been agreed to be married to Ganjurjab. He was the son of the Inner Mongolian army general Babojab.
What a cracking name.
It's a great name. Feels like it should be in Star Wars.
Boba Fett.
His father was one of the people that led the Mongolian-Manchurian independence movement in 1911. So quite the family of shit stirrers.
Yeah, like this is obviously like a totally tactical marriage. Ganjurjab is like connected to this Manchurian world. Eastern Jewel is connected to this Manchurian world.
Connected to a family. They think they've got a bit of power behind them, a bit of arms, and they've got Yoshiko is kind of, I guess, the princess and the name and the power. What can they possibly do? What does Yoshiko do? Fucks off!
Yay!
It took her about 2 years and she told the prince she was off to conquer the world.
Imagine having the ball. Like, I think in those days as well, like, men held a lot of power. So imagine.
Still do.
Smash the patriarchy. Yeah. So the fact that she just like to his face after 2 years is like, yeah, I'm off. Bye.
Bye, bitch.
Bitch, bye. But she had other plans. She was off to take her vengeance on China. Or the Republic.
As you do.
The Republic,
Republic
of China
specifically.
Who had sort of overthrown her family and just wrecked her life, basically.
Yeah, so she wasn't happy being a pawn. She was off to do it for herself.
You go, girl.
You go, girl. So she moved off to Shanghai, where again she finds friends and manages to find somewhere to live and get her first glimpses into politics and espionage.
I mean, her first glimpse, she went to military school and her dad was a spy.
Aye, but she's not tried it. She's just been trained. She's like gone to spy school, like Spy Kids or whatever. And now she's like a spy.
This is mission one.
Mission one. Although we know very little information on actual missions, this is not very well documented.
This is our first solo mission. Take over China. Okay.
Take over China. Nice easy one for you, Yoshiko, for your first mission. Take over China.
Well, this is all of her own making. Nobody's forcing her to do this. So she feels a lot of loyalty to Japan. She's obviously lived there since she was 8. And she basically fucking hates the Chinese Republic. And they've cheated her out of her birthright. She is a princess, you know, after all. So she starts taking undercover missions in Manchuria, often in disguise,
of course. I'm sure she loved anything for a costume change.
Absolutely. There's a quote here that says, Yoshiko was strikingly attractive, with a dominating personality, almost a film drama figure, half tomboy, half heroine, with a passion for dressing up as a male. She possibly did this in order to impress the men, or she may have done it in order to more easily fit into the tightly knit guerrilla groups without attracting too much attention. You go, Mulan.
It's part of me just thinks, that's one hell of a Tinder profile.
Her Tinder profile would be like War and Peace.
She's my kind of lady.
She is wild.
In her role as a Japanese agent, and with her, I guess, no knowledge of the Manchuria region, she collected enough information for the Japanese to engineer a series of incidents. Sabotages?
Wow.
That created an excuse for the Japanese army to attack China and to set up several puppet states.
She's getting busy.
She's getting busy.
Seriously busy. Okay, so Yoshiko was really well acquainted with Puyi, who was the last child emperor of the Qing dynasty, who regarded her as a member of the imperial family and had also welcomed her into his household during his stay in Tianjin.
So whomever she was working for is kind of aware of this relationship and familiarity and kind of puts them in the same place for Yoshiko to start using her very powerful powers of persuasion to get Puyi to become a figurehead ruler of Manchukuo, which is a puppet state created by the Japanese in Manchuria. So Puyi at this point was in Japan as kind of a runaway, but the Japanese wanted to place him back in China to create, I guess, this legitimacy of them being in China, because they're saying, ah, it's Puyi's bit of China. It's not really Japan. It's okay.
I mean, Puyi himself has like the most interesting story. Like, you could, there's
another film you could watch.
Yeah, if you watch the film The Last Emperor, which we did this week, like, so interesting. And like, he is really, he feels that he's doing this sort of off his own back, and he is legitimately the emperor of this nation, but it's all tactical. He's basically a puppet, and all the strings are being moved by these agents and members of the Japanese government, and which is a real shame, isn't it?
And because his life is so closed off, I just don't think he has the information to be able to see it on a wider scale and understand what's happening to him. Yoshiko, in a bit of a bitch move, then criticised Puyi for being too amenable. And she's the one that's like influenced him to go.
She
and be part
is totally
of this.
Playing the game, and like, they are blood relatives, and she has
don't
so
care.
Much. She has so much loyalty to Japan that she's willing to kind of put Puyi in this position in Manchukuo, knowing full well that he has basically no power,
no authority.
It's crazy.
So she stays around in Manchukuo for a little bit of time. She takes
licking
on
toes.
Get onto that. She becomes a mistress of Hayao Tada, the chief military advisor to Puyi. So again, another ear to whisper in and to influence.
She's getting about, isn't
getting
she?
Getting about. In the film which we watched, there's a little bit that's, again, probably bullshit to put on TV. And she's portrayed as the lesbian lover of Puyi's wife, the beautiful Wang Jun. Not much evidence on this in reality, but if you want to watch an odd, slow, toe-sucking 30 seconds of film.
Also very, like, opium-driven.
A bit of opium-driven. I think part of me smacks of that is, like, they've not brought in a consultant and they've had the conversation, which we've had with many people, usually when they're drunk, of, how do lesbians have sex?
Apparently it's smoking an opium pipe and licking some toes.
Like it's a penis. I mean, it's just not...
It was horrific. I was like cringing the whole way through. Anyway, so if you've watch the film if you want. But yeah, that's... I mean, I don't feel like that really happened.
No, probably
she
not.
She might well have like been totally influencing Puyi's wife. She's influencing him. She's influencing all of his generals, all of the people around him. She could well have been sleeping with his wife.
I did read... Again, just going through random bits of shit. There was a really throwaway comment about one of her lovers that she was taking up shared her foot fetish, her boot fetish or something.
What?
So I was like, maybe they've taken that and then just gone extreme. But it's like, who's documenting Yoshiko's foot fetishes? It doesn't feel very well substantiated. Not to say one can't have a foot fetish.
We're not discriminating against those with foot fetishes, but no. This part of the film was particularly disturbing.
Yeah.
What can I say?
The Emperor Puyi himself in the film is like sexing everyone. Well, both of his wives. In reality, he may have also been bisexual and perhaps not slept with either his empress or concubines. No children?
There was no children, and there was rumours that his wife had had an affair while in Manchukuo and with the driver of the emperor, and they'd had a child, but it had actually been assassinated shortly after birth by the Japanese. So, but also she was an opium addict, so it, you know.
I don't know how good the heroin is for your fertility.
I would say quite negative.
Quite negative. Also very sleepy, so you know, the sex drive might be a bit shit.
So for a success in the sort of Puyi operation, Puyi, that sounds dreadful too.
Operation Puyi.
Operation Emperor.
Probably had a better code name.
Her associate spies appointed her to the commander of our own Japanese army to fight against the Chinese in Manchukuo.
Boom.
She is rising.
She's good.
Rising star.
She's a rising star. I mean, it's always nice to be appreciated at work.
You're in charge of your own unit now. So she forms an independent counterinsurgency cavalry force. What?
She does like a horse, as we learned earlier.
But counterinsurgency cavalry force. It's not very subtle, is it? Like riding in. She's but then subtle. She's not a subtle person. Okay, in 1932, and it's made up of 3,000 to 5,000 former bandits to hunt down anti-Japanese guerrilla bands during the pacification of Manchukuo.
Love the word pacification in theatres of war. Sounds nice.
It's
not nice.
It isn't nice. Yoshiko is hailed by the Japanese press as the Joan of Arc of Manchukuo.
which is a lovely claim to fame, while she murders people from horseback. So they really like, they'd totally latched onto before, but now it just kind of becomes a bit like insane, the celebrity around her. They get her to release like a record, like she sings.
No! What? Is she a good singer?
No, she's shit.
I'm imagining, like, what's her name? Fucking hell. I can't even remember. Katie Price and Peter Andre.
Oh, they're like, world. Yeah, Katie, you can sing. It's fine.
No, or, like, Jerry from The Spice Girls.
Or, like, what's her face? Hermione.
Emma Watson.
Emma Watson. Babe. No. She also, like, stars in, like, shitty novels at the time. They write her in and stuff. So she becomes this real piece of propaganda. Fucks up her opportunities to be spy.
Yeah, I mean, she's gone totally out there.
She's a bit too famous now. In 1933, for some reason, somebody might not like Yoshiko. Can't imagine why. Not
she's
like
woman.
She's murdered anybody or caused trouble. While she's addressing her army, apparently, she was shot by one of her own soldiers. You can imagine that went down like a lead balloon. It reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, when someone's been like naughty in class and they've like stole something, it's like, you're not leaving until I find out who it is.
Everyone. I mean, like, I've got a story about this, which is like a side note.
Side note,
so
deviation.
In our year four primary school class, right, someone, like, there was all these, like, what would you call them? Thingies on the wall, what do you call that? Decorations. There's all these like bits of like bits of people's
work
on the walls, and like the teachers do spend a lot of time like
making it pretty,
preparing it and making it nice when visitors come, blah blah blah. And someone had written Graham in pen on like in the
was
middle
it
of
Graham?
This, in the well in the middle of this like board, right? And like our teacher flipped the lid, right? And she made us all, even though it was Graham's name and we did have a Graham in the class, she made us all sit, like, in prison and write Graham down, right? And then she would, like, analyse.
Oh my God, handwriting analytics.
And I was like, this is so dodgy, right? So I knew straight away, like, how you wrote the Graham in our class's name, like G-R-A-E-M-E. So I wrote,
oh, she was like,
even though I was completely innocent.
She was also testing that offensive to people who are dyslexic.
Like, even though I was completely innocent, man, I was riled up. So I wrote it down as G-R-A-H-A-M.
You spelled it wrong. You're so
and I was
completely
innocent. What the hell?
It does also sound like something you would do.
It wasn't me. Like,
you were a bit of a shit.
I know I've done this before, like in history class and stuff, but in secondary school, but no, it wasn't actually me. And we were all made to sit like prisoners, so that kind of shit.
Yoshiko takes a similar tact, bit more aggressive. She has her entire army tortured and interrogated.
What the hell?
Until she finds out which bitch
shot
her.
She is ruthless.
I mean, you just can't let shit like that go. I mean, if somebody tries to pop you off,
fair enough, but also like
sort it out.
Bit of investigation. Use your spy skills to find out who it was.
No, just brutal force.
Anyway, oh my god, yeah. So following this, she's offered the unit of Japanese Kwantung Army for Operation Neka, but it was refused. The unit continued to exist under her command until sometime in the late 1930s.
So you can imagine why she wants to offload them, because they tried to shoot her.
Yeah, they're not feeling her.
Not feeling her leadership right now.
Absolutely not. So her very popularity created real issues with the Kwantung Army, because her utility as an intelligent asset was long gone.
Like, oh, hey, it's Yoshiko.
We know who she is. Oh, that's her who had that single out, yeah? And her value as a propaganda symbol was compromised by her increasingly critical tone against the Japanese military exploitive policies in Manchukuo. She's kind of not become... She has really lost kind of all use now.
To them at this point in time, yes, she's become a little bit of a loose cannon, I think they would describe her.
She is a real loose cannon. So, yeah, I think that's... where we'll maybe leave it for this episode.
For this week.
So she's, I mean, what a life so far. She's literally become a national symbol and is like a spy princess and running her own like army.
Yeah. And we don't really know half of what she was up to, because it was all super secret, squirrel.
Super secret.
On the down low.
So in the next episode, we're going to continue on from this point and... yeah, it gets even more interesting. Okay, so it's my turn this week for gay fact or gay fiction. So I know that you know so much about gay dating apps, Hannah.
Literally never had one.
So this is going to be, I know that you won't do any of this, Grindr. Hopefully.
It's Grindr the answer.
Possibly. Okay, so I'm going to give you a list of... I'm going to give you a list of five names of gay dating apps, and you're going to have to tell me which one isn't a real app.
Oh, okay.
So knowledgeable. Okay, so here we go. We've got...
whatever, I'm like, on it, and then you're like, why?
You'll be fucking out the house. That's all I'm saying. Like, if anyone has found Hannah on any of these apps,
Plenty or Fanny.
Oh. Okay, so here we go. We've got... number one, scissor.
You just have to do the like hand move.
No,
don't you?
No guesses which one that one is.
Is it even possible?
I don't know. I wouldn't know, Hannah. Number two, hornet.
That's shite. It's quite fucking hornet.
It's quite
that's
aggressive.
Hornets are very nasty. Okay. They chop off the heads of things.
Oh my god. Okay, it's an app, Hannah. Number three, scruff.
That sounds like a gay dirty gay app.
Well, that's the impression of it. Apologies.
A bit of rough on scruff.
I should have said this before, but apologies to anyone who's actually using any of these apps. We're not judging. We're just purely going off the names that I said. We are useless.
We know it's desperate times, and apparently it's cuffing time.
What's cuffing time?
Cuffing time when you find somebody for winter to like snuggle with because it's cold.
Oh my god! Get on these apps.
Tis the season. Of cuffing.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, number three, scruff. Number four, growler.
I love growler.
Now, in the north, a growler is something quite different to a
fanny.
Day. I would say it's your big hairy minge.
Yeah, you fanny.
Your growler.
Your growler.
Got a shave me growler.
Not just in the north. That's, like, wider.
Okay. Number five, thirst.
Thirsty bitches.
Thirsty gays. Okay, so we've got...
I cannot remember all those. Okay, I need them, so, like, written down.
Just to recap, as we usually do, we've got scissor. Hornet.
Hornet.
Scruff. Growler. And thirst. Only one of those is not a real...
Not a real one.
Good it now.
I mean, I think I feel I have heard of Scruff before. I don't know why.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm now trying to use process elimination to like work out which one.
Scruff you think is a goal?
Scruff I think is an app.
You think it is an app? Okay, right. Yes. What about Scissor?
I mean, I'm trying to like psychoanalyze which one you are most likely to have BS'd.
Well, is this your mind?
Is your mind created the lie?
Obviously. Right. Yeah. So like, yeah, you need to try and...
I don't believe you personally know what Hornet is. Right. So I'm seeing Hornet is a real app.
Hornet is a real app.
Is a real app.
Okay, right.
Because that's not something you would...
Wow, harsh.
So what we got... Scissor, I think, is a possibility because I think you will think you're fucking hilarious with Scissor as an app. What have I got left?
So you've got Scissor you think is real. Hornet you think...
No, I think Scissor could be your bullshit.
Okay, Scruff. Growler.
I think that's a bit more common than you think it is, so I think that's possibly a dating app.
Yeah, and then Thirst.
I mean, again, Thirsty Bitches. That seems possible. I'm saying Scissor is the BS.
I hate to tell you this, but Scissor is a real app. Scissor is a
dirty bitch.
I mean, no, there's no like subtlety in the name here. Scissor is a gay dating app for women.
Do you want a scissor?
Scissor with an R, like the way they spell it is S-C-I-S-S-R.
Why? Has somebody fucking TM'd the word scissor?
God only knows. Yeah, so Scissor is real. Hornet is real.
Yeah.
That's for gay and bi men. Scruff, yes, is real. It's for gay men. Now, this is one of my favourite ones. Growler is a fucking fantastic name. Is a social networking app aimed at bears.
Oh, it's nice that there's something for the bears.
I love that. So yeah, Thirst is the one that I threw in there. Which I'm very proud of myself.
Damn it.
If Thirst is a real app, please let me know, but I couldn't actually find it. So yeah, that's the fake one.
Why have you been downloaded fucking dating apps in lockdown? Get ready for lockdown 2. Get your dating apps up. Can't fucking see anyone.
My iTunes app store is going to be very confused why I was looking at all these gay dating apps.
Can't wait to see the targeting ads off your searching for game dating.
Hornet website. And Growler. Scissor. Anyway, so yeah, part two of this is...
All right, if I was a gay dating app, what would I be?
So this is more about like the myths around LGBTQIA plus people using dating apps versus heterosexual people using dating apps. Okay, so... Do you think gay people use...
The people.
Our people. Use dating apps more in a week or straight people?
I mean, this is a horribly loaded answer. Because the stereotype would be that I would say that the gay community might be a tad more prolific.
Just a tad.
Just a tad more prolific. But then also it's like... The odds are not in your favour.
Yeah.
As a gay
person. So what are you saying, that the gay people use the app more or the straight people?
I mean, I kind of want it to be the straight people to be more thirsty bitches. But I've got a feeling it's harder to find another gay person, so you might be more on your gay apps because, you know, 1 in 10.
This mythical figure that we talked about last time.
Okay. You can learn more in last week's podcast.
So yeah, so I took...
What have you personally done the statistics on this? Because I have no faith.
So I took the top gay dating app, which is
Grindr,
and the top straight dating app, which is Tinder. These are the figures for how many minutes a week a user uses the app.
Harsh.
So for Tinder, it's 55 minutes average a week.
That's a lot of swiping.
That's not even an hour, Hannah. A whole week. But
I get bored.
For Grindr, it's 165. It's nearly 3 times as much.
That's a lot of swiping.
That is a lot of swiping. That's a lot of scanning the area for gays. So the myth is totally right in this sense.
Wow. I mean, maybe on Grindr, people just have more in-depth conversations prior to the banging.
I don't think that's how it works.
I'm not a child of the
app situation.
The app life.
They're thirsty.
And on that note...
Keep thirsty, guys!
hope you've enjoyed part one of Yoshiko, Spy Princess.
You missed the most important part. Bisexual Spy Princess. Yeah, so if you like what we're doing, please rate, share, subscribe. You can email us on beingbettergays@gmail.com. We'll see you at the next episode, part two of Yoshiko Kawashima. Bye!